The following was recorded on Friday, November 20th, 2015.
Dear friends, at moments such as this, when we are witnessing all too frequently the perversion of faith into a call to violence, it is especially meaningful to be joined by a partner in the religious community who labors not just in his own vineyard, but in the rocky terrain beyond it, to teach the messages of justice and compassion in a world that needs to hear them. The very Reverend Dr. James Kowalski has been Dean of the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine since March of 2002, elected by its board in 2001, soon after 9/11, and just a month before a devastating fire struck that great cathedral. Following repairs, the cathedral was rededicated in 2008, and its restoration and strategic repositioning continue. An important part of its institutional mission is to invite people through liturgy, art, and discourse into the great conversations of our times and into advocacy for more just societies, a mission worth emulating. Since his ordination in 1978, Dean Kowalski has served parishes in Newtown, Hartford, and Darien, Connecticut. He is a board member of Episcopal Charities, Diocese of New York, the Center for Interreligious Understanding, and the advisory board of the Episcopal Actors Guild of America. He has been a Henry Crown Fellow at the Aspen Institute, a Fellow of the American Leadership Forum, and a participant in several interfaith conferences abroad sponsored by Peace Research Institute Oslo, most recently in Iran. In 2015, he traveled to South Korea as part of the Conference for World Peace and Reunification of Korea. The dean's wife, the Reverend Dr. Ann Brewer, is director of palliative care at Stanford Hospital and Episcopal priest. His daughter, Becky, is a surgeon at Lenox Hill Hospital, specializing in general surgery, and his son, Matt, co-owns a cybersecurity company in Maryland that subcontracts with the federal government, all of which must make for interesting conversations around the Thanksgiving table. Dean Kowalski and I serve together on the board of a partnership of faith in New York City, and he has become for me a wonderful friend. I am honored to invite to our pulpit the very Reverend Dr. James Kowalski.
Thank you, Josh. As you probably have already figured out, I'm the only non-scientist in my family, so Thanksgiving will again be a challenge. It's sad that last year, when I preached here, Jews had just been slaughtered while they were praying in the Har Nof neighborhood of Jerusalem. And 1 week ago this evening in Paris, the attack included the Bataclan Theater, which until very recently was Jewish-owned and had been a target of well-publicized anti-Israel and anti-Semitic protests and threats. As you too well know, this is the world in which we live. And because the world has always been besieged by terror and violence, my return to this pulpit represents even more than an ongoing commitment, as important as it is to me, with Josh and between this synagogue and the cathedral. That's a remarkable friendship, and the collegiality undergirds so much of what we believe in and is important to us. But that we're engaged in congregational ministries, this partnership of faith, is faith communities that endeavor to be forces for good, is what I'd like to think with you about tonight. We know Hillel's famous ethical teaching, if I am not for me, who is for me? And if I am only for myself, what am I? And if not now, when? As a Christian, I deeply respect the Jewish tradition, making it a responsibility to give aid and assistance, money, to the poor and needy, and to worthwhile causes. As people of faith, we must understand that we are meant to be such stewards, and that the principle of such stewardship is expressed, at least in part, by how we give for the common good. Your traditions, particularly tzedakah, of righteousness, fairness, justice, have taught the world an example of what it means to give in such a way to the poor, not just as a generous act, but as an act of justice. Worship for you ends by praying that people be sent out to perfect the world under God's sovereignty, to repair it, to fix it. Christians are supposedly also sent out, we often say, from a table to which all were supposed to be invited, all, and everyone nourished, and then sent out into a world, literally, because this feast is meant to mend in length. How long such healing, sharing takes place, and also expansiveness of that feast adds to the healing. It's not a surprise that Torah in ancient agricultural economies expressed such acts of justice, particularly at harvest time, in terms of instructing believers to leave crops standing in the corners of the field so others could reap and their needs for survival be met. Right now at the cathedral, we have what we call an exhibition titled The Value of Food Sustaining a Green Planet, which is all about food security, hunger, access to healthy food, local and urban farming, factory farming, our diets, the culture and spirituality of food, which is intended to draw upon the cathedral's social justice initiatives. It's meant to clarify for us and to others that there's a convening authority that we've been entrusted with, that we are able to put under the roof of the cathedral, as Josh mentioned, great conversations of any given time. That was the cathedral's mission as envisioned by its founders. The remarkable model of philanthropy American Jews have developed over the generations now has greatly influenced the larger community and its broader philanthropic structures. The tradition of taking care of our own has now reached far beyond our own to a broad array of institutions that originally met, for example, as you well know, immigrant needs, support for synagogues as built, for Jewish welfare agencies, what would grow into a remarkable federation of communities and become a source of care and comfort that could embrace all people and does now, all across the world. People across economic spectrums who struggle with issues from which no one is immune, like autism or other forms of illness, end-of-life care, caring for our loved ones as they age, nurturing the spirit, the body, the mind. As people of faith, we have the opportunity to be a part of such life-saving and enhancing safety nets for the communities most vulnerable. And my goodness, can you see that writ large in the city of New York? Yes, we reach back to our various ethnic homelands and, of course, the support of Israel, but all around the world, making a difference, creating networks and agencies that feed the hungry, help the unemployed and underemployed, empowering those with disabilities, extending compassionate hands to the aging, including supporting and organizing help at times of disaster. And I don't need to tell you that Business Week consistently reports that the most generous philanthropists in this country include lots of Jewish folk, usually 15 of the top 50, which is a remarkable percentage when you think that, what's the Jewish population, something like 2% of the American population, representing something like 30% of the generosity of donors, mega donors, which, as I talk to some of my other Jewish friends, remind me consistently that these are people who give more than $10 gifts a year to charity, 10 million, are not only giving to Jewish charity. The fact that the overwhelming majority of such donations don't go to specifically Jewish causes, that various charities and good works benefit because of the encouragement of this charitable activity, the promotion of what it means to be faithful, to be true to our scriptural writings and traditions. It's not surprising that at first we reached out in charitable works to those segregated communities that we were part of, our own, especially at times of crisis. These were, in fact, victims or people trying to make a go of it, trying to be secure and to have a better life. But now, we have opportunities every day to go far beyond that. And to do that as faith communities is to do that in a way that sends not only the message of individual support and care, but what it means for us to be people of faith. I've served congregations which have felt called to common and corporate responses. And that may seem trickier than it needs to be. I know some congregations resist becoming involved in social justice efforts as a congregation, as active as their individual members may be, because they want to avoid conflict and division. I understand my tradition, however, to say to our communities of faith that we grow spiritually not only as individuals or families, but also as faith communities over a lifetime as we commit ourselves to three things: worship, lifelong learning, and service to others as communities. I've seen this happen in the places I've served, like Newtown, Connecticut. Yes, that's where those horrible shootings were. That's the first parish I ever served. They helped found youth services in Newtown. That may seem ironic, but as we know, the needs are still there as young people get stranded and isolated and are often in the midst of that, and mental illness or whatever else is going on, engaged in horrific violence. Or in Hartford, Connecticut, the congregation involved in the creation and oversight of 112 units of Section 8 low-income housing and a teen pregnancy prevention and pre-Head Start child care center. Or in Darien, Connecticut, where I was about 14 years ago before I came to New York, a parish that after the assassination of Dr. King created the person-to-person Social Service Agency on its 7-acre campus, serving clients to this day from Stanford and Norwalk. Why take the risk of engaging a congregation corporately? Why not simply keep the focus on how individuals or their families can repair the world? We make a difference when we boldly state, as faith communities, I believe, that we can work together from within and also in collaborations like the Partnership of Faith and others, with others across faiths and cultures to be forces for good. And in my experience, that doesn't have to lead to polarization. We can allow a variety of program options to emerge from the genuine concerns and interests of individuals or the context of our communities. We don't have to box people in or politicize these outreach efforts or shame people if they disagree or opt out. But the truth is, we know that the prophets made it clear that there is a social and ethical praxis to faith. Faithfulness is not about some laundry list of projects or causes. If outreach becomes that, then we risk facilitating one-shot ventures or fads or take-it-or-leave-it options for congregants. What we need as congregations, I think, is to develop diverse disciplined theologies that inform our actions as individuals and as families and as faith communities as we build more just societies. What better antidote is there to the wanton disregard for the dignity of each person evinced in the violence of terrorists, the long history of anti-Semitism, the ideologues of prejudice and hatred? What better antidote is there than to cultivate ethical norms across faiths and cultures? Our faith need not be either spiritual or social. The spirituality, I think, of true faith connects what we say we truly value and believe in with what we actually do. That's when we're empowered genuinely as religious and truly faithful people in our communities with those actions undergirded to make a difference. That has to matter, and it relates directly to justice and fairness, like living wage issues, how even things like clean water or the accessibility of health care or affordable food have all become commodities. And research suggests that congregations that are predominantly private or so-called conventional in their mindset with regard to such outreach may actually intensify ethnic prejudice and political reaction. The congregations which regularly explore together in a biblically theological framework public priorities and become in their focus more cosmopolitan in terms of human social need are actually more likely to act in the spirit of justice with compassion. Abraham Heschel taught that individuals learn about God not by reason and intellect, but through experience, divine revelation, and sacred deeds, by what he called leaps of action, as opposed to just thinking in terms of leaps of faith. Heschel taught us that the prophets had a breathless impatience, as he said, with injustice, which may strike us almost as hysterical because we witness continually acts of injustice, manifestations of hypocrisy, falsehood, outrage, misery, and too rarely grow indignant or even get excited. But to the prophets, even a minor injustice assumed cosmic proportions. After the film Selma came out, you may have seen the headline. It quoted, "Fresh controversy hits Selma. Daughter of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel shocked by exclusion of her father from the film." I went to school with Susanna Heschel at Trinity in Hartford. She's now a professor, as you may know, of Jewish studies at Dartmouth. Her father, Abraham Joshua Heschel, as you know, and has been memorialized by this extraordinary picture, marched alongside Dr. Martin Luther King at the third protest march from Selma, which is the one depicted in the film. But that iconic photo of her father marching with Dr. King, which she said, and I quote, has meant so much to so many people, was tragically left out of the film. Susanna Heschel went on to say, and I'm quoting her, "President Obama said to me, 'Your father is our hero,' and everybody knows that picture." I think everybody does know that picture. "I felt sad," she said, "and I had moments when I was angry about the omission." In the future, which iconic photographs of breathtaking moments on the arc of justice, when the mighty acts of God break in, and we have the privilege of being part of such righteousness, which of those photographs will capture us in the frame as individuals, but also as congregations? Dr. King used to say, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." May our lives be long as people and communities of faith, emboldened by the God who calls us to acts of mercy, love, and justice. What a privilege it is to be with you this night and to be a part of your great traditions as a congregation.